InDigital is on a mission to improve the 911 industry. Our goal is to create something better, to go above and beyond the current standards. Our passion for creating the most advanced, well-designed solutions led to our position as an industry leader in next-gen core services. For the millions of calls processed over our emergency IP networks, to our Text for 911 solution, Texty, to our disaster recovery and backup solution, Mevo, it's easy to see we love what we do. For more information, check us out at www.indigital.net.
Rapid Deploy believes that every public safety agency, regardless of size, should have access to the data they need when it matters most. That's why, since 2016, our mission has been to reduce emergency response times and improve public safety. We are the industry's only integrated emergency response platform. Our web-based cloud platform includes analytics, mapping, dispatch, and mobile apps, purpose-built for 911 in the 21st century. Visit www.rapiddeploy.com to learn how we enable effective, efficient, data-driven emergency response.
If Within the Trenches has ever taught you something, open your eyes to what it is like to be a 911 dispatcher, or has inspired you to become one, then help support us and join our Patreon. Get exclusive bonus content, one-of-a-kind swag, discounts on merchandise, ad-free early access to new episodes, and much more. To join, please visit patreon.com/WTTpodcast. And if you're an industry partner, we have something for you as well. And now, for the show.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning, this episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
What's going on? This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. This episode is sponsored by InDigital as well as Rapid Deploy, and thank you, as always, to patrons and all of you who watch, listen, and share and support. I couldn't do this without all of you, so thank you so, so very much. I am recording episode after episode, and it has been excellent. It's just having the, just knowing the fact that I have all of these episodes ready to go has just been really, really good, because we're getting into the holidays now, and, you know, it's more family time that's going to be going on, but also things have just been busy. Things have been busy, but it's good. It's a good busy. And, I couldn't thank all of you enough. I can't thank you all enough for everything. So we're going to jump right in. When I saw this story, I just happened to be speaking to someone who is kind of involved with this story. And I said, I need to get a hold of the person who was involved in this incident, because this is a pretty cool story. And I would love to get this person on to talk more and share their entire public safety story. So again, I'm excited for this episode. And my guest today is Monica, and she is a dispatch supervisor and trainer out of Harvey County Emergency Communications out of Kansas. Hey, hey.
Hi, Ricardo.
How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. You know, busy as always.
Of course. Yes. There's always something going on, right?
And
then then you throw in 2020 pandemic and all the other stuff, and
and holidays, and you know, days off are never days off, so that's kind of the way that it goes.
Right, exactly. Now, so I have to ask you right off the bat, before we even talk about how you got into dispatching, what are you working right now? Do you work days or do you work nights?
I work day shift.
Okay, so have you worked day shift your whole career, or have you had nights?
Oh, no. Mm-mm. No, so the first couple of years, I worked second shift, which for us was like 5 p.m. to 1 in the morning at that time. I did that for a couple of years, and then I moved to night shift, working from midnight to 8 in the morning. I did that for like 6 years, I think it was. So most of those years are a blur, you know, and I also had, you know, I'm happily married, have 4 kids. Of course, you know how it is with a family, you know, and night shift, you're just all over the place. So it was a struggle. And then I eventually got onto day shift, where I've been for quite some time now. This year, with it being 2020, you know, we lost a few people. We were short staffed. And so I did have to, another day shift supervisor and I did have to share night shift duty. And so we kind of swapped months. So 1 month I would do nights, and then the next month he did, you know, and like that for a little bit. But I am happy to say that we have all of our staffing in order. And so I'm back on day shift permanently. Right now, I'm working 8-hour shifts. Starting the beginning of the year, the supervisors will go to 10-hour shifts. So we'll be working 4 10-hour days, which is what we had been doing for quite some time. But then again, with COVID and our staffing issues, which it was very unusual for us, because we pride ourselves in being one of those agencies where we don't lose people. You know, we keep people around for a long time. And so it was a little unusual for us to go through staffing issues. So yeah, we'll be back on our 4 10-hour shifts starting January 1st, which I always joke with my husband that, you know, shoving 3 days worth of laziness into 2 days was a struggle. So I'll be back into having my 3 days of lazy.
Well, and so the reason I ask you about the different shifts and stuff and what you were working is because you mentioned how when you have a day off, it's never really a day off. And what I was the opposite, where I worked the majority of the time, it was night shift, and I love night shift. But on those days off, yeah, it was the same way. It was never a full day off, because, you know, I would get home. We were 12-hour shifts. So for myself, it was 4:30 to 4:30. And so I would get home and I would only sleep maybe 3.5-4 hours, because I felt like I was wasting the day, you know?
Exactly. And I remember that.
Yeah. And you don't think about the fact that getting plenty of sleep is good for your own health. You just want to, you want to go and do what you got to do. So for me, you know, I would get up and just go and hang out with the family and do what I needed to do. And then finally, I'll just like finally crash out.
Yeah. Yeah. You just kind of hit that wall. You just gotta crash. So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. And continue going on. So let's backtrack a little bit. How did you get involved in dispatching to begin with?
I had a very good friend of mine that was a dispatcher here in Harvey County. And she had told me, hey, you really need to do this. You know, I think that you'd be good at it. And I was like, oh, I don't know. You know, it seems like a lot. And she said, no, really, you know, you should try it. So I sat with her a couple of times. And I just remember thinking, of course, the first time I sat with her, they didn't have hardly anything going on. So I'm like, yeah, I can do this, you know. And, you know, this is cake, nothing. And then the next time they had a few things that happened, I was like, okay, this is getting a little bit more real. And then I think it was a month or two later. Now, again, with the staffing issues, her agency was not, Harvey County, the agency was not needing anybody. Mm-hmm. But a neighboring county did. And so she convinced me, yeah, go ahead, you know, just sign, you know, just go in for an interview. And so I did. I went through the testing and, you know, they do a psych eval and all this other stuff. And amazingly, I was selected. So I did go through training with that agency. There were some issues as far as personnel issues there. And I was really kind of struggling, I guess. I mean, the job itself is hard enough, but then when you have personalities get involved, sometimes it can really be a struggle. And then Harvey County, amazingly, One of their dispatchers had gone to school to become a teacher, and he got a teaching job. So that freed up a spot. And so I actually started working at Harvey County part-time. I left the other county and I went over and I started a part-time gig. Well, I ended up working full-time hours at part-time pay. So that's basically how I got started. It was just, my friend telling me, hey, you can do this. So
you were green going in. You didn't have any other experience or anything going in?
None at all. My grandfather was a police officer. That's about the extent of it. He would tell stories, back when he was a patrol officer, they also did dispatch. And so he would tell stories, but I imagine that was a much different animal than what we have today.
Right.
other than that, I had zero experience whatsoever. I was in the military for a while. I did odd jobs. I never really had any experience with any of this at all.
So in some of those odd jobs, though, was there any customer service there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Working for restaurants or, to working in retail and that sort of thing. It was Air Force straight out of high school, went into the military, did my 4 years, ended up getting out of the military. My husband was still active duty and I got out so that, we could stay together because he was being sent overseas. And we had two small children at that time and I didn't want to split up the family. So I ended up getting out of the military, went with him. And then it was, working at the golf course or, working retail or restaurant work, that sort of thing.
So really you kind of had a little bit of that, that experience going into it. And what I mean by experience is you had the discipline, of course, from the military and then through customer service, you start building more of those people skills and learning how to navigate different situations. And then you jump into, to 911. And I mean, how much different was that for you than coming from that type of background? But all, then coming in and now you're taking calls in these life and death situations.
That was, pretty much the biggest challenge. Well, I'm not going to say the biggest challenge, but it was one of the biggest challenges was knowing that, things that I did or were responsible for could ultimately affect somebody's life one way or the other, whether it was for the good or for the bad. And I pretty much from the very beginning, I was fairly hard on myself as far as armchair quarterbacking, the Monday morning quarterback, on the way home, oh, you're so stupid. Or, you should have done this. You should have done that. But it was, I think that was pretty big challenge, just knowing that if I don't do my job now, somebody could die. Whereas with retail, if I didn't do my job, somebody didn't get the size of shirt that they wanted, or, there were no smoothies available, type of thing.
Yeah.
So,
and it's interesting though, right? How, you've been doing this for about 17 years now. I did it for 13 and a half years, but even you're always learning something new, right? Some new
technique
or some new way to speak to somebody, whichever. But there's that one common thing there where certain calls and you have to get by the obstacle, which is you, yourself. You have to get past your own thoughts when it comes to some of those calls, like you're saying, when you're going home and thinking, man, what if I would have done this different? Or what if I, and some of it, it's okay. But it's when we get real deep into it, where we're getting to the point where we're kind of blaming ourselves.
Yeah. And
really, we did everything that we could. But in that moment, we don't always think that, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And, I think you touched on a very interesting point there as well, that you really have to make sure that you take care of yourself in order to be able to take care of other people. Compassion fatigue is very real. And it was one of those things where I knew that there was something going on with me. This was probably about 8 or 9 years in, but I couldn't figure it out. And then I had gone to an APCO conference And I went in to a compassion fatigue seminar. And I tell you what, that was such an eye opener for me. You know, I had four small children. And so I'm taking care of people's needs and problems at work. I'm coming home, I'm taking care of people's needs and problems here. You know, and I was, a lot of times I'm, for my friends, you know, I'm the go-to person for when they have a problem. And I was spending so much time taking care of everybody else's needs that I was not taking care of myself. And also working night shift. You know, we talked about the struggles of not being able to sleep properly. You know, that played into it. So, you know, I think just knowing what my limits are, also learning to say no when it was an option is, you know, is definitely something that people need to figure out.
Yeah. Learning how to say no is definitely that it's a hard one. Yeah. And like it I is. Was saying, it's getting past ourselves in, right. in a lot of these situations. Now, you know, kind of looking back, you know, we were kind of talking about, you know, training and such. And there were some issues that happened in the first center that you were at. Mm-hmm. And for myself, I had some issues with training as well, where, and I've talked about this before, but it's having, you know, three different trainers teaching in their own way. And mm-hmm. there's me who's trying to learn each one of those ways and mm-hmm. maybe using the way of the first one with the second one and then mm-hmm. saying, no, you're not doing it right. You know, do it my way. And then you're okay. Well, am I going to make it through this? And you obviously made it through. You've been doing it for 17 years. Was there anything in during your training, something that solidified the fact that this job was the job for you?
Just a couple of the calls that I was involved in and knowing that at the end of the day, the satisfaction of knowing that I made a difference to someone mm-hmm. and that, that meant a lot, you know, that's very fulfilling to know that it actually mattered. And that, you know, I know that there was one particular call, and it was, gentleman that was contemplating suicide. And it was one of my first calls that I had taken in training. And, you know, of course there were some embarrassing moments during that call, on my part with the gentleman was basically, he was calling 911, not for help, but he was going to kill himself in his van. And it was because he just didn't think he had anything left to offer. And he wanted to say goodbye, but he didn't want to actually say goodbye to the people that he was wanting to say goodbye to. So he knew that 911 was recorded and he wanted to basically call us and have us say he was sorry and say goodbye to his loved ones. And so I talked to him a little bit. My first oops on that one was, you know, I asked him if he had children mm-hmm. and, he said that, yes, he did. And, you know, mentioned his wife. And I said, what about your wife? I mean, how is she going to feel? And he said, she left me and took the kids. Oh, so how do you recover from that? You know? Yeah. And I said, well, you know, it doesn't matter. I said, you can still be a good father. You know, you're providing for them. And well, he just lost his job too. Which is why the wife took the kids and left. And so I do remember feeling at that moment sudden dread. And then internally, I had to calm myself down and say, okay, if I was this guy, what would I need to hear? What would help? And so I just kind of built off of that, you know, and I just had him kept talking. Of course, he was getting mad, you know. And kept telling me, listen, bitch, I don't want help. You know, you just need to listen. Okay. I'm listening. Tell me, you know, what do you need? Cause I'm here to listen. And he said, well, you don't care about me. I said, sir, I said, I wouldn't still be on the phone if I didn't care. I said, I could have hung up on you a long time ago. I said, but I'm here to help and I'm here to listen. And so after that, that pretty much solidified that I wanted to do this. And I want to be the person that, you know, who would I need on the other end of that line if I were in that situation? And I want to be that person.
It's definitely a calling, right?
Yes, I believe it is. I believe it is. There's, you know, I have some friends that, you know, darn good and well that they would not make it. You know, you've got the overly emotional ones that cry at commercials. You've got the overly angry, don't have much patience for people that, you know, they're not going to work out here. So, I'm very careful with when we have, positions open. I'm very careful with, hey, you should apply because there are certain people I love them dearly with all my heart and I would die for them, but I do not want to work next to you.
and it's good to be able to recognize that as well, right? that definitely helps with, you know, others who end up coming in to do sit-alongs and you kind of see how they react to certain things. And, because you don't want to bring somebody in who is just might just not work out. You know, they might freeze up or and you don't want to see that along the way, you know, further on into training. You that's why it's always good to have those sit-alongs. So
yeah,
that is perfect. So with your early training, you know, the kind of the issues and everything that you dealt with there, was that at all an inspiration for you yourself to move up to supervisor as well as trainer?
Oh, absolutely. I think that it really helped me with being a trainer. It helped me to know that there's certain ways that you treat people who are in a training status, and being militant, yelling at them, cursing at them, calling them names, making them feel stupid is not the way to do it. You know, that was just the main thing. I just remember going home just in tears, just feeling, and I was told, at that first agency, you'll never make it. And if you're here for more than a year, I'd be surprised. Or, you know, if you're doing this in a year, it'd be a miracle. And I can't imagine how many people you'll kill in the meantime. You know, it was things like that. I was taking a call and I was told that, first of all, I was told that, you know, if shit hits the fan, that the trainer is going to take over the call. So me being brand new, the call that I take is an elderly female. She's maybe 90 pounds. Her 200 and something odd pound husband, who was 90, 93, had a heart attack while taking a pie out of the oven and fell onto the hot oven door. And so I mean, I'm brand new to me. That's shit hitting the fan. So I hear my trainer asking questions. You know, I hadn't gone through any EMD or anything like that. So I hear my trainer asking questions. And so I'm thinking that she's taking over the call. Well, at one point, I just stopped talking and she gets in my face and she says, if you don't start asking the questions I'm telling you to ask, I'm going to rip your effing face off. Now go. Done. I, you know, of course that was a time when I was a lot more sensitive. I didn't have the thick skin that, right, I've developed over the years now. And so that I still get emotional thinking about that moment, because that was a lot of stress on me. And so knowing that the people that I'm training, I know because I experienced it, they're going to be harder on themselves than I ever could be.
Of course.
So treat them with dignity. Treat them with respect. Don't tell them that they're stupid, because they're not stupid. This is, you don't know what you don't know until you learn it. Sometimes it may take two or three times to learn it. It may take months, weeks, years. It could just take one event to learn it, but you don't know what you don't know. And so every time I'm with a trainee, that's just something that I instill in myself, that I need to treat them with the respect of a human being and know that they are wanting to help. So
that is a great way to train, you know, basically being human. I mean, that's what we're doing there, right? You're being human. And people have asked before, what does it take? Like, what do you have to do or know or whichever to be, you know, a dispatcher and call taker and stuff? And it's like, well, common sense and to be human. Like,
right.
You have to have that element there to be able to do this. Of course, you know, thick skin and all as well, but, you know, you hit it right on the head. So you made me think back to actually a couple of conversations that I had when I was a supervisor in dispatch. And, you know, we did monthly quality assurance, or if something happened, a lot of times they would say, I think I jacked up that call. And like, okay, well, let me pull the tape. And I was dating me there. Let me pull the tape and listen to it. And, you know, sometimes it would be something else. Maybe I had the day off, and the next time I came in, I had already had, you know, received an email saying you need to pull this call and you need to do quality assurance on it and then speak to the person. Like, okay. And then I would bring the person in, and they would almost always say, I know exactly what you're going to talk to me about. Mm-hmm. Let me have it. And I would say, look, just like you had said earlier, there's nothing that I can say really that's good. Mm-hmm. You feel bad enough as it is. There's nothing that I can say that will make you feel worse, because it's eating you up. And because that's the way I was as well. It would eat me up, and I would just, you know, sometimes kind of dwell on it a little bit, but then of course, you know, you got to push it out because you got to take the next call.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a way to speak to someone about a call that they took that they may have, you know, kind of messed up on a little bit without being a jerk about it.
Right.
There's a way to be, it can be done.
Yeah. Yeah. You really can't beat up somebody more than they're already beat up in their own mind. So.
Now for your center that you're working at now, how big of an area do you guys cover, and how many people actually are on at a time?
Oh goodness, so our county, I want to say is roughly maybe 50,000. Mm-hmm. So you know, we're not a large area by any means. At any given time, we've got usually three dispatchers on. Preferably four is what we would like to have. There's times when we'll have five on. Sometimes overnights might only have two, but there's never less than that. So now,
is that the five that you're talking about, is that more for maybe special events if there's something going on, or even weather, or?
Well, it just depends on how the schedule falls. Now, obviously, special events or weather will have more on. Fortunately, we also have our TERT team, the Telecommunication Emergency Response Team. Mm-hmm. We'll send a couple of people out on the communications bus to an event. Like we just, weekend before last, we had a large fire just north of our town. Mm-hmm. And so we had the emergency dispatchers out there, which freed up dispatch, you know, to take all of the other calls and the radio traffic not associated with the fire. And it turned out to be a, you know, 2-3 day event. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So we would have the two dispatchers on for the event out in the field. And then we'll have our three or four in the dispatch center.
Gotcha. Okay. And so I just so that, you know, those who are watching and listening can get kind of an idea of how everything works there and how big it is. Like for my center, our minimum was three. Mm-hmm. And our top was four. We had five consoles, and we would sometimes have five there, but usually it was only when shit was really hitting the fan with weather and there's trees and wires everywhere.
Yeah.
Already set the tornado sirens off and it's going to hell. Doing an all call, like, anybody who can help out, come and help out, because we need it.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had that a couple of times, you know, when we've had to call in a bunch of people. 2016 was kind of a not good year for our county. We had 12 homicides that year, which I don't think we had 12 homicides in the previous 25 years combined.
Wow.
So that was pretty big for us. We had an active shooter situation at one of the plants in Heston, Kansas, XL shooter. Three people lost their lives, four if you count the shooter. But yeah, that was kind of an interesting day. I was actually off work that day. And I was at home and I was making homemade chicken and noodles and some bread. And so I was from fingertip to shoulder in bread dough and flour. And I just happened to be wearing a 911 t-shirt. Mm-hmm. And my husband's a firefighter for our town here in Burton. And his pager went off. And I heard one of the dispatchers stating something about an active shooter needing all available units respond to an active shooter situation. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, this idiot just broadcast a training on a regular channel. How could you do something like that? You know, never in my wildest dreams would I have imagined that we would have an active shooter here in our little area. Wow. And so, you know, and then all of a sudden, and so I'm, you know, running my mouth about, oh my goodness, you know, I bet he feels dumb, you know, look what he just did. And then all of a sudden we get breaking news, the TV was on and we get breaking news of an active shooter situation. And, I think the reality, it took me a few minutes for that to set in of what was happening. And I remember brushing off most of the dust and off of my arms. And I told my husband, I said, I'm going. And so I hopped in the car and I headed to town because I knew that they were getting their asses handed to them.
Right.
And they were, you know, you walk in and the looks on the faces of the people that were sitting in there. I can't even imagine. It still gives me goosebumps to this day. Just knowing what they had been going through. And of course the phones were still going off the hook. And so I went and I grabbed my headset and I shoved one person off of the console. I said, you go, you know, go down the hall, go do what you got to do. Take a minute. And so then I started taking calls as well. And they lasted for hours. You know, of course you have family members of employees at this facility that are calling in. Hey, I haven't heard from so-and-so. My son is so-and-so. My brother is so-and-so. My daughter works there who died. And so, you know, that was pretty tough. And then of course you get, you know, news media calling, you know, and they're wanting updates and we don't even know what side is up at this point. So that was kind of difficult, but so yeah, that was kind of an eye opener,
man. It's interesting too for those who don't work in public safety. You know, when you say the calls are still going off the hook, that's one of the things that people don't always understand is that there's an active shooter incident going on, but 911 doesn't stop.
No,
there is still more and more that's coming in, and then you have to figure out, you got to start triage. You know, you got all these different calls that are coming in. You've got all of 911 and then you've got that one incident and you probably have multiple people calling who are also involved in that incident who might be hiding or other things that are going on. And it's just chaos.
It is absolute chaos. And I think part of, you know, one of the hardest things to do at that moment is you've got somebody that may be at the scene on the phone with you, there's another line ringing. There's another three lines ringing and everybody is tied up and you've got all of your radio channels going. Everybody's talking at once. And knowing, just trying to decide, okay, do I put my caller on hold or hang up on them to answer the next call? Because what if the next call has more information or is more important? Or is the next call, I'm mad at my neighbor for parking in front of my house?
Right.
Because you still get those. You know, people don't care that there's an active shooter going on, you know, 10 miles away. What they're worried about is whether or not their neighbor's Great Dane pooped in their yard. You know, that's, to them, that's their emergency.
Yes.
Or you know, the regular heart attacks or the domestic disturbances, you know, and, you know, you get these other calls that come in that are also high priority, but not as high priority as an active shooter. Mm-hmm. How do you get an officer to this other call when, you know, they're still looking for a suspect? They're possibly looking for more than one suspect. What if in the early minutes when you don't even know how many people are involved, was this a one person going in? Did he have other people that were their partners? You know, do you have 3-4 people? You don't know. And then trying to decide, okay, well, can I safely pull an officer or two officers or three officers off of this situation to send them to something different?
Yeah. Oh man, you're making me flashback.
Yeah.
Because I mean, so just as an example, all these calls that you're talking about, that person who calls about, and of course this is hypothetical, the person who calls about, you know, the person's dog pooping in their yard or a neighbor who's parking in their spot or whatever, what if that person, that's the day that they've had enough and they end up doing something. They end up harming that person. Mm-hmm. Now you've got another situation that's going on. Mm-hmm. It's something that you were trying to pull an officer from this high priority complaint from, this active shooter. And now you've got another high priority and you got to tone it out, put it out. And now you've got to chase over there and deal with that as well. Whew.
Yeah. Well, and to make things even more interesting was that before the active shooter went into his workplace, he had gone home in another town on his lunch break and had gotten his rifle and actually shot people on his way on from his car and got out of his car and stole a truck and was shooting into other vehicles. And so we had other injuries. We had stolen vehicles happening. Of course, at that time, you had no idea that all of this stuff was related.
Yeah.
No idea. And so you're just sitting there thinking, what in the world is happening here? You know, and then you get, and then the guy steals a vehicle and then he makes his way to the, you know, 10 miles down the road where he works and then he walks in and just opens fire and, you know, and it's a manufacturing plant. And so, you know, in the early minutes, they didn't know that it was all related. They had no idea. All they know is that we've got people shot over here and then we've got a stolen vehicle. Oh wait, maybe we've got two stolen vehicles and oh, now we've got an active shooter. So yeah, it has its moments.
Yeah. There's a lot, definitely a lot to that one call, you know, and it probably you found out about it after everything else that happened. Mm-hmm. Oh, these were related. They're you end up putting it together and man, 911 can't make this stuff up. This stuff happens.
Your worst day is my work day.
Yes, exactly. It definitely happens. Now, so again, this is 17 years worth of experience. There's a lot of different things that you have dealt with. You started out, you know, dispatcher, call taker, and then moving up, supervisor, trainer, and so much more that you've been doing. Now, there's a call that you dealt with recently, and I'm not sure how recent this was now, but the one that we're about to talk about here. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got some of the information here, but I would like for you to kind of set this up a little bit. But so you were speaking to an elderly male who suffered from COPD, What was it that actually happened with this call? Was it a location thing, or what happened with it?
So, I received the call from the elderly male, COPD, PTSD, lots of letters thrown around in there. He was having extreme difficulty breathing. Mm-hmm. And this was actually, I want to say it was in June, because I believe that it was my first stint on night shift. So it's this year, just a few months ago. So I had just started back, first time on night shift in what felt like 100 years. he called from a 911 only cell phone, mm-hmm. And very, very old phone, did not have accurate location service on it at all. He was also confused as to his address. He had given me an address that was his from like 10 years ago, and it was several miles from where he was actually at. My mapping was showing his location. I believe it's a tower site, in the middle of a park. There's nothing there, but there's some picnic tables and, a skate park and a splash park. And I knew that that was not correct, because there's no way that an elderly male with COPD would be at a splash park at 2 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. Common sense. I could also hear a TV very loud in the background. He was Sports Center. It was some Sports Center thing. And as I'm trying to talk to him and figure out where he's at, he's really having a hard time breathing, struggling to get words out, confusion, lots of confusion. He would stop talking a couple of times. He stopped talking. Of course, you don't know. Okay, did he set the phone down? What was going on? But I could tell, I could hear the TV volume going in and out. So I knew that he was moving around in his house, and I just happened to look up and I see the what three words, and they were changing. I'm going to be completely honest. Like, I hadn't really paid much attention to that. Mm-hmm. I thought, I wonder. So I had him, first of all, I had him turn the TV down so I could actually hear what he was saying. And then I had him stay in one spot. Okay, can you just sit down in your living room, turn the TV down? Well, the three words stopped changing. So I took those and I copied them into the search field. And it showed me a location 1.1 miles east of where it was pinging him on the rapid deploy map. Mm-hmm. And so I asked him it's an RV park that people live at year round. So I asked him if he lived at the RV park. And he said he didn't, he goes, I don't know. And I said, well, do you live behind the Chinese restaurant? Yeah. That's where I live. So I knew that his confusion was not allowing him to be confident in his numbers and his location, but I was confident in the three words. They knew, that we could find him. Asked him which unit number it was. And he wasn't really able to provide me with that information. Of course, he was also, again, struggling to even speak at this point. So I kept him on the line until EMS arrived, knowing that he was deteriorating, and it was a 911 only cell phone, that I wasn't going to be able to call him back if I lost him. And his confusion had progressed to the point to when they made contact with him. They just went ahead and went on into his house, the medic units did. And I could hear the female medic unit. She said, hi, and called him by name. And she said, we're here to help you. What's going on? And he said, I didn't call you. I'm fine. And she said, you didn't call 911? No, I called 911 a few days ago, but I'm better now. And so I got on the radio and I said, actually, I'm still on the line with him and you are at the right location. So they did triage him code yellow, which I don't know if that's the same everywhere, you know, serious but not life-threatening. And they took him down to a Wichita hospital.
That's good. So, yeah. So, and so you were able to find him there, you know, an excellent save through this platform. Now, before before I show this real quick clip of What Three Words, I want to mention to those who are watching and listening as well, for those who might not know what a 911 phone is, it's an NSI phone or non-service initialized. This is a phone that doesn't have any service. However, you can still call 911 and you're able to get through. And the location is not great. It'll show right in the tower. It's like the address of the tower, basically a phase one, really. And, you know, there's a radius of up to almost 12 miles, I believe, where the person could be. And that's not the greatest thing. If you've got someone who knows their surroundings and everything, you can kind of figure out where a person is. If they're at a house, if they don't know their address or whichever, you can have them look for a piece of mail or go outside and, you know, landmarks, whichever. However, in this case with you, the person was confused and, you know, didn't have a way to share the location of where they were at or anything. And also, if you let your child play with a phone that doesn't have service, take the battery out if you can.
Yes, just buy the plastic one, really. Make those.
Because otherwise, what happens? You end up getting a 911 either open line or a hang-up call. Mm-hmm. And you got to figure out where they're at. Or
send out. Or your kids learn that they can call and talk to somebody by pushing those buttons. Yeah. And if they're old enough, then they figure out, oh, we can have some fun. And we've had that a few times too.
Yeah. But how satisfying is it when you when you have one like that and you find them?
So real quick, there was this girl, a little girl, and she had a 911 only phone. Mm-hmm. And she had it on, had smuggled it on the school bus. And so she was calling. And the first day, you could tell that it was an accident. She had no idea, because you hear her say, oh my gosh, 911 answered. And then you hear another little voice say, hang up. Well, then the next day, this little girl calls again. And so I answered Harvey County 911. And she goes, Harvey County 911. And I was like, oh, you're mine now. Yeah. So she, right. You know? And so she hung up. Well, then she turned around and she called back again. And so then this time I did the whole pizza thing, but kind of did it in reverse. And I said, thank you for calling Pizza Hut. And she goes, what? And I said, you've called Pizza Hut. I said, and congratulations, you are the 100th caller for the day. You get a free pizza. And she said, what, really? And I said, yeah. I said, what's your favorite kind of pizza? She goes, pepperoni. And I said, all right. I said, you come to the store, we'll have a pepperoni pizza waiting for you. She said, but I'm a kid and I can't drive. And I said, that's okay. We'll bring it to you. What's your address?
Yes. Well done. That is excellent. That is super.
So sadly, she didn't get a pizza.
Nope. Oh, that is superb. That I've had the same thing in the past, and it was a kid who just kept calling and saying mm-hmm. all different kinds of things, and some pretty crazy things too mm-hmm. about, you know, people being shot and all this other stuff and swearing at us. And we were able to get a location, and I remember the officer showing up and him keying up saying, Central, I'll be out at such and such address. I'm pretty sure I'm at the right one, because there's a kid who was looking in the living room window and just ran. And and sure enough, it was the right place. He called from the phone that this kid was calling from. And we're like, yeah, that's the one. He's like, okay, hold on a minute. You can hear mom yelling in the background, and the kid gets on the phone and apologizes. And we're like, all right, well, don't do it again. And then hang up. And we're like, yes.
Yeah. It's the little things, right? You know?
Right? Yeah. Because those could be things that, you know, are every phone call we have to take as priority one, like it's something right. real. And then when you get others to call in like that, then it's like, so going back to what we were talking about here, I want to share this this little clip. This comes from What Three Words, from their website, actually from their YouTube channel, because I want people who are watching as well as listening to get a little more information about What Three Words and what it's all about here. So let me add this and we'll play this here really quick.
Have you ever struggled to find a friend? Had a taxi take you to the wrong entrance? A package delivered to the wrong address? Or couldn't explain where you were? We developed What Three Words because addressing around the world should be better, and talking about a location can be really hard. Addresses aren't unique. They're easy to confuse, don't point to specific entrances, and for a lot of places, they don't exist at all. People struggle to find each other, and businesses fail to reach customers. It's frustrating, costs the economy billions, and affects lives. What Three Words is a solution. It has divided the world into 3-meter squares and given each one a unique 3-word address. It's as simple as saying, lanes larger daring, to find that specific location on Earth. Around the world, people are using 3-word addresses for everything, from telling their car where to go and finding that tucked away cottage, to getting deliveries and directing emergency services to the right place. What Three Words is helping to make the world a less frustrating, more efficient, and safer place. 3 words at a time.
So that video shows a lot of, I believe this has all started out in the UK and now it's being used a lot in the US as well. And I even sat through a demo of it and it seems really cool. I mean, it's marking it in those 3-meter squares, which is basically like a parking spot, really. And so you had this come up. Is this something that you have up all the time, or how does this work on your end?
Yeah, so we we've got the rapid deploy, and it's with our phone system, and then the What Three Words is just constantly there on the map.
Awesome. And then you're just able to use it from there and get those. So, okay, I have to say this really quick. I am thoroughly jealous because not a lot of this stuff was going on when I was in dispatch. I've been out of dispatch for 7 years. And every time I talk to a dispatcher or call taker who's able to utilize technology like this, I get a little jealous. I wish I had this around when I was in dispatch, because it would be awesome to be able to put all of this together to find someone, to save a life that way. And so kudos to you and, you know, to those who develop, you know, this technology to be able to help everyone as a whole to do more for public safety in 911.
Yeah, just thinking back of all of the different calls and all the different scenarios that we could have used this for would have just made a lot of difference. Motor vehicle versus train accident that I took several years ago when I was still new, brand new. And, you know, they had no idea what railroad crossing they were at, where they were at. You know, something like this would have just been so phenomenal. We could have gotten them help a lot quicker. I mean, I don't know that it would have changed the outcome, but just, you know, maybe take the helpless feeling out for that situation. You know, the helpless of, I have no idea where you're at. You're talking to me and I don't know where you are. And then that would have been one obstacle that would have just very easily been overcome.
I think saying that way, yeah, definitely. You know, it does take away from some of those thoughts afterwards. You know, how we were talking about early on, how some of these calls we go and think about what if I would have changed this, or what if I would have changed this? Maybe I could have, you know, found them faster or something. This helps to take a part of that away. You're right.
Right.
It helps kind of with that healing process as well, that I was actually able to find this person. In this case, saved a life. In other cases, it might not be that way because, right, you know, that's just what happens in 911. But even if it went the other way, at least you would have the satisfaction of knowing that you had something in place where you were able to find that person.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a blessing. It really is. You know, and this isn't, you know, a big brother thing. You know, we're not watching people. We're not, you know, spying on people. This is a tool to save lives, mm-hmm, and to make seconds count, to make minutes turn into seconds even.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And this has been an excellent episode, and I thank you so, so much for being on. This has been awesome to get to know you and to share stories back and forth, and really to highlight this as well, this, you know, this save through technology. Now, so as we've said before, you've been doing this for 17 years. You've seen technology from the past and now as it is in the present and what it looks like going into the future. So going into the wrap-up of this episode, what advice do you have to not only those that are newer coming in, but especially those that are seasoned, you know, seasoned dispatchers and call takers, because we all know we don't like change, right? We don't always like change. However, change is good, especially stuff like this. So for those coming in and those that have been there, the seasoned dispatchers and call takers, what do you say to them looking at newer technology for 911?
You know, the times are changing and we need to embrace those changes. You know, if you can't beat them, join them. This is one of those things where, you know, we live in such a high-tech world, in a fast-paced world. You really have to embrace the technology, embrace the changes. And yeah, it's, you know, it is hard to teach an old dog new tricks, you know, which is one of the reasons why, like I said, I hadn't played around with the what three words much, you know, a little bit here and there, but I didn't actually, it wasn't at the forefront of every call that came in. You know, it wasn't something that I didn't really dismiss it, but it wasn't something that I made a priority, mm-hmm, until this call. And now, you know, I'm the one that's across the room. You know, when you've got somebody on a phone call, I'm the one that's yelling, what three words, you know, and for the new ones, just enjoy what you have and learn from the old ones, learn from the seasoned dispatchers, but enjoy the technology that you have because it hasn't always been this easy.
Awesome. Thank you. So,
well,
so
thank you
for being on. And this has been an excellent episode. And thank you for the job that you do.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you for bringing it to the web and for spotlighting everything. So your time is appreciated as well.
Thank you very, very much. I will be right back with you here. For those who are watching, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, email us. WTTpodcast@gmail.com. I'll throw this up here on the screen really quick. WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @911podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode has been sponsored by Indigital as well as Rapid Deploy. And if you are looking for any bonus content, you can check us out. And that is going to be patreon.com/WTTpodcast. Thank you so much to all the patrons as well as all of you who watch, listen, share, and support. I wouldn't be able to do this without you. So thank you so, so very much. This episode can be seen on Facebook, YouTube, as well as LinkedIn, and can be heard 24/7 on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, your favorite podcasting app, and withinthetrenches.net. Have a good one, everyone, and I'll talk to you soon.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to wttpodcast@gmail.com.